137. So it's basically a 1-2 punch in terms of treatment. The cesium ends up getting concentrated into a very small stream that also goes to DWPF and ends up in glass. And the resultant waste stream, which we call decontaminated salt solution, that ends up going into the salt stone facility and becomes grout. So just a little bit of background about how we're treating salt waste right now. We started up ARP MCU in 2008. And up to this point in our history, we've processed about 4.2 million gallons of salt waste. And we have typically achieved a cesium-137 decontamination factor of between 150 and 200. So as an example, what that would mean, let's say we were feeding MCU with salt waste that had 2,000 parts cesium in it, parts per million, decontamination factor of 200, we would render that down from 2,000 to 10 parts per million. So that's been our five-year history. At the end of FY13, we shut down MCU so that we could deploy a new solvent. That is the material, the chemical used to extract the cesium. We put this new solvent in, Max Calix, and we usually refer to it as the next generation solvent. So we did that at the end of last year, and we've started operating with that new solvent, and that's what I'm here to tell you about today. Just again, a little bit in history. We started up in 2008, and as you can see, we processed about 100,000 gallons of salt solution. By the year 2013, we had that number up to about 1.3 million gallons of salt solution that year. And we could have done more, but we started that year in an outage. At that point, we realized we were going to run ARPMCU a little bit longer than we had originally planned. We replaced a lot of equipment, did a lot of maintenance, and basically set that plant up for a longer production run. We had a good run in 2013, and then at the end of 2013, we shut down to put the new solvent into the process. In 2014, we started up on that new solvent, and I'll talk to you a little bit more on the next slide. And up to this point, we are at about 170,000 gallons of salt solution processed this year with the new solvent. And I want to tell you how that's working out for us so far. After we deployed that new solvent, we did go into an outage. We were accumulating solids in the process. We've got that all cleaned out, and we restarted just 2 days ago, and we're back up and running. So that's our history, where we've been up to the point where we deployed the next generation solvent. That deployment, we started it in late August last year, finished it up in the middle of September. We had another outage after that. We had some maintenance that we had to do in the plant. We got that done. We got that done during the furlough period, so it stretched out the outage a little bit, but we managed to get everything done we'd intended. We started up with NextGen solvent on December 7th, and that was a great day for the site. Our initial operation of this plant was done in a batch process. That's a very inefficient way to run a plant, but we wanted to prove that that we understood how the new solvent was behaving. So we ran six batches that were a little over 7,000 gallons apiece. In between each batch, we sampled and held that material until we could confirm that it met the waste acceptance criteria for DWPF and salt stone, which it did. And we came out of that batch process with some very preliminary results, and right off the bat, as I'll show you on the next slide, our decontamination factor was up by a factor of 10, which is good. We then transitioned into a period of continuous operations, which is how the plant is designed to operate, and I'll show you those results in just a minute. And about that time, we This deployment was selected as a DOE secretarial award. I think there are some people in the room that participated in that. Thanks for your support. And let me drive on to the next slide. So here's a very simple graph. So right here is where we started up in early September. And I've added this little red line here. So this was the old decontamination factor of 150 to 200. On this scale, it would be right on the x-axis. Okay, so it would overlay the x-axis, being that the first tick mark here is a DF of 10,000. So right off the bat, we were getting DF data points in here that were at least 10 times better than the previous solvent. And remember, that was during a batch operation, which is not how the plant was designed to run. As soon as we came out of that batch operation and started running it continuously, you see that we have even higher decontamination factors. We actually have several in here that are approaching 10,000 instead of the old 150 to 200. And we even have a couple here that are up much higher. We don't attach a whole lot of importance to those data points, although they indicate that for short periods of time we can get some very high decontamination factors. So at at this point, having only run 170,000 gallons of salt solution through the plant, what we're saying is that we it looks like we can achieve somewhere between 10 and 100x improvement over what we had. And as we continue to run the plant, we expect to prove that out and just keep adding to the data, and we'll see if we can get it towards the high end of that range as we go forward. So just recapping where I've been here, we started the plant, we shut down the plant in April in the middle of this continuous run. We shut it down for reasons having nothing to do with next generation solvent. We recovered from that. We started back up again July the 9th, and we're running well. We do believe that with more operation of the plant, there are some knobs in the process we can turn to try to get the most out of this new solvent we can get and maximize our DF. And I would hope that by the next time any of us come back to this committee, we can have a lot more data under our belt and just show you where we think we are in that range I had spoken to earlier of 10x to 100x better. So potentially it could be even better than that. We just don't have enough data to demonstrate it yet. But I hope we'll be able to say that next time we come up here. So, so far, what we've seen out of the next generation solvent is very strong performance, very good decontamination factors, and what that means for the state of South Carolina is less radioactive material disposed of in the state, and hopefully significantly less. Now, while we've been doing this in our little interim salt processing plant, we are linked at the hip with our counterparts over on the salt waste processing facility, and we're sharing the data as we generate it with them on a every other month basis. And there have been periods where there's enough new information to where those meetings are even more frequent. But for the last couple of months, we've been on an every other month, and we actually have another technical exchange with our SWPF counterparts next week. So far, so good. We're cautiously optimistic that we have a real step change improvement in our performance with this solvent. That's my last slide. Any questions for me?
Questions? I have a question, not about the MCU specifically, but about the fact that ARP MCU was put in place as a short-term interim facility unit, whatever you want. Is it going to wear out before we have salt waste processing?
That's an excellent question. And you can see this outage here. We had another outage there. We have another one planned to coincide with the DWPF melter whenever it will fail or reach the end of its life. And we have two big sets of life cycle extension improvements that we did in that outage and that outage. And we have another suite of improvements planned for the melter outage. So I think we can make the plant run. There's one other thing. We don't feed this plant with the higher activity feed that SWPF will get. So I think we have several measures in place to help this plant get to SWPF startup.
Great, thank you.
Anything else for me?
Just very briefly, with such a large change in DF, is there any understanding of some synergism to get that large change in terms of the in terms of what the solvent is actually doing?
I don't know if I follow your question, sir. Why is it better?
Well, yeah, I understand what the difference in the calyx, but all of a sudden you're getting a very, very large change, and so usually I associate that with not just the change of a single extractant, but rather the enhancement due to two chemicals interacting together. And I was wondering what the difference is between the, for example, that one peak that you saw there. Is there any understanding of that?
Not at this point, no. We don't understand why we got that. I will say this. There are a number of tanks in between the contactor banks in this process, and there is a heel of waste in each of those tanks, and we can get into a point where any little perturbation in the process will carry forward into the next sample and the next sample. So it's hard to identify exactly what happened on any one of those peaks or valleys in a continuous process. But as we generate more data, we will focus in on that and learn what we can from those that are abnormally high or low in this process. In the past, we had the opposite problem. We had some very low DFs, and we focused in on what the process was doing at that point and determined the cause for that. Our solvent was gaining contamination, and we had to wash it and recover it. So we do look at those. We just haven't developed enough data yet to make us really investigate the one or two points that appear uncommonly high.
Thank you.
One quick one. When do you expect SWPF to come online?
The current date that we've been given is September of 2018.
So to answer Karen's question from earlier, we have our eye on that 2018, and we want to make sure our plant will last so that we can continue to process salt while we're waiting.
What was the initial plan to have that online?
I don't remember the first date. I think it was 2000. Yeah, I think it was 2008. But I'm not positive on that date. Our next speaker will be Dan Wood, who will talk about the tank closure and regulatory process.
Good afternoon. I am responsible for the tank closures at the site. That work includes putting the equipment in that lets Neil get the waste out and to treat it and push it on to Steve where we can disposition it. Also, of course, prepping the tank for grouting. So I'm going to walk you through that process and where we are. The process is shown here in a stair-step pattern. I'll remind you, the site has 51 high-level waste tanks. They are four different styles. 24 of the waste tanks we call the old style that don't have a full secondary containment. And so our focus, and rightly so, DHEC is focused as well with us on those old style tanks. So the 24 is what you see here in green, and I've kind of highlighted where they sit on this stair step toward operational closure. So the first step is bulk waste removal. This is where most of the resources are spent, whether it be funding or time, design work, is in getting the pumps in to be able to mix up the waste and get the waste out of the tank. We follow that bulk waste removal step with heel removal. The heel removal can be mechanical, like bulk waste removal is, meaning a mechanical washing type process, or can involve two types of chemical processes. One of them is caustic, where we do an aluminum dissolution to help loosen the waste up and get it out of the tank. The other type is one we recently completed on tank 12, which is called bulk oxalic acid. It's an acidic process to dissolve a different set of chemicals, and again to help loosen the waste up and either dissolve it or get it to where we can mix it up and move it out of these tanks. The cooling coil flushing, the annulus cleaning, those steps are only done on the tanks that need them. Not all tanks have coils and annuli, but they're performed as needed. The isolation work is what we do to mechanically separate and electrically isolate the waste tank from the rest of the tank farm system. During isolation or just before it, we'll go in and sample whatever residual material is left in the tank. That sampling is done to be sure we can characterize that residual. The characterization, the analysis is done in the laboratory, and we work with DHEC to lay out both the radionuclides of concern and the chemical constituents of concern, so the residuals are analyzed for those materials. Then finally, after the tank has been isolated, we do work on the tank top to prepare it for grouting and then grout the tanks. Tank 12 and 16 are the two that are nearest the grouting step. Tank 16 is in the lead of that, so I'll talk about them today. We mentioned earlier that we do have six tanks closed. Tanks 17 and 20 were done some 15 plus years ago. They were the first ones done. However, new regulations had to be put in place at the federal level to be able to continue to grout tanks. So that took some period of time. We moved on and did 18 and 19, and most recently have completed 5 and 6. The picture on the bottom left is a little bit staged. We waited and had all of our regulators join us, as well as the workers, to watch us pour the very last bucket of grout in the tanks 5 and 6. So that's what that picture is showing. We were very proud of that. They were completed nearly 2 years ahead of schedule. The status chart on the right was sent out to many of our stakeholders and regulators every week, including to Washington, to show progress as we worked through that process. So the workers completed that in December of last year, and tank closure was also selected as a Secretary of Energy's honor award. Along with that, and about the same time frame, we achieved what we call the preliminary cease waste removal approval. This is a concurrence we get from the regulators, DHEC and the EPA, on allowing us to proceed into sampling. So tank 12 sampling will begin next week, if not Monday, Tuesday, to start the sampling process of residuals in that tank. Tank 16 sampling, previously we had gotten the cease waste removal on tank 16, and tank 16 sampling was completed last calendar year. We are now in the analysis phase. I'll talk about that some. We also issued the update to the H tank farm performance assessment. We do have a performance assessment that looks at the long-term impact of the whole tank farm to groundwater and potential intruder analysis, that type of thing. That has been completed and approved, and we're working through the regulatory processes to get the waste determination on H tank farm. Tank 12, as I said, we did get concurrence to move into sampling and analysis and are doing so. We've set the tank up to support drying. When we completed the oxalic acid last summer, It did take overcoming quite a few technical hurdles to get there, but we completed that with a water wash to help remove as much material as possible. So there is some liquid left in the tank, so we're working to dry that. We have begun the sampling activities, the work packages, the tools, the techniques. We are planning to remove a sample from the coils. This tank is one that has over 2 miles of 2-inch cooling coil running in it, similar to 5 and 6. And on this tank, we identified that there is some residual material actually adhered to the coil, as if it's crystallized there. And so we will be sampling that material so that we can characterize it, as well as the material that's on the floor of the tank. Our critical path work here runs through that sampling. It takes 6 to 8 months to get all of the analyses complete, and then you move into the special analysis, which is an update to that performance assessment that I mentioned, to show that we're still bounded and have no long-term impact to the public or the environs. Once that process is complete, we get into the approval that Shelley mentioned earlier, the closure module process that would allow us to move into grouting. We forecast completion of Tank 12 in September of 2016, and we are working to accelerate that schedule. The two pictures that you have on the right here, the one on top shows the work on the tank top. The huts are there to control contamination when we open up the tanks and go to get samples, or in this case, this picture was taken during the bulk oxalic acid cleaning phase. Down below, you see the inside of the tank in a panoramic. The cooling coils seem to change sides, but that's just the sweep. That's just part of the way the panoramic is done. They're all 2 inches in diameter throughout that picture, but you can see just light residuals on the tank bottom is all that remained. Tank 15 is also a tank we're aggressively pursuing. Tank 16 has the last large sludge inventory in an old-style tank. It is also one of the tanks, it's the last dry tank. A lot of the sludges and salts were allowed to dry out in the tanks in the previous decades. This is the last sludge tank that's dry. It is an old-style tank. It's in the same four-pack with Tank 13 that we've been removing sludge from, and so actually the 15 material will be transferred over to Tank 13 and then be moved forward for disposition. You see that Tank 15 is right beside Tank 16, so I'm going to talk about that next, and then Tank 14 is also in that four-pack. The removal process for this sludge will have us first rehydrate it, basically add a caustic solution of water to the tank. That'll allow us to free the sludge up and move it. Once we have that water layer in place, we'll install 4 mixing pumps and all of the equipment to go along with that. This is a tank that had a history of leakage, so we'll be monitoring that very carefully during the whole process. We plan to start the bulk waste removal once we start up these mixing pumps to continue the process right through the bulk waste removal and through the mechanical heel removal. We're putting 4 large mixing pumps into this tank with the expectation that we'll be able to mechanically clean this pump enough to seek the cease waste step and approval to stop waste removal here. We do have a contingency plan to do chemical heel removal if we need to, but we do not know if that'll be necessary with the 4 large mixing pumps installed. So that's the story on Tank 15. The tank we'll grout next is Tank 16. Tank 16 was put into service and started leaking almost immediately back in the 60s, and so that tank was removed from service. It has sat with some very limited amount of material in the annulus. We worked through the process of ceasing waste removal efforts in this tank. We got approval to go into sampling. Those samples were pulled last year. We're within a week or two of the laboratory completing the entire suite of analyses. will then go into the statistical work based on that laboratory, those laboratory results, and into the closure module development. The first part of that has been done. The rest of that module will be working as information comes available to load into it. Ultimately, a special analysis will be done with the actual results of the residuals in the tank, and that'll be presented to the regulators for approval. Tank 16 is forecast to be completed in September of 2015, so in the coming calendar year. H Tank Farm, all of the tanks I just talked through, 12, 15, and 16, are in H Tank Farm. H Tank Farm does not yet have all of the regulatory paperwork in place to allow grouting. We do have a general closure plan with the state of South Carolina on that approach. However, the waste determination approval from the Secretary of Energy has not been given yet for H Tank Farm. It has for F Tank Farm, so we're working through that process. All of that is in line with the National Defense Authorization Act of 2005. There is a regulation in there we refer to as 3116 that lays out this process of how that waste determination is made. In that process, the NRC acts in consultation with DOE up until the time the waste determination is made. One of their reviews is to look through the performance assessment report and provide their technical evaluation. That was done in F Tank Farm prior to the waste determination, and we have now received the technical evaluation in H Tank Farm. The NRC does have areas of interest, but there were no major surprises or concerns presented there, and the NRC has presented their results publicly. So DOESR is working with DOE headquarters to work through the H Tank Farm waste determination approval process. That'll do what we call the Tier 1 approvals, and then Tier 2 involves work with the site and the state on tank-specific approvals, one for Tank 16 and its closure module that we referred to previously, and then finally we'll do one for Tank 12. So that's the extent of mine. I'm happy to take questions. Your handout has some backup information in it. That I think you've seen before, but having to do with the tank type so that you can kind of tie together what the tank types are. Tank 12 is a type 1. It'll be the first type 1 that we've done. Tank 16 is a type 2 that is identical to types 5 and 6 that have already been grouted.
Just wanted some little clarification on when you say leakage, you're talking about leakage into the saucer. You're not talking about leakage beyond the saucer.
Okay, so only one tank has ever leaked to the environment that we are aware of. That tank is Tank 16. It's the reason it was taken out of service so early. It had large leakage into the annulus, and the annulus pan did overflow some small amount of liquid into the adjacent soils. They actually made it through the concrete encasement and into the soils. So that was a legacy of Tank 16. All of the other tanks are in an inspection program. That leakage is monitored if it's occurring, and the operating level is dropped below the lowest known leak. So if you look at our charts that show waste in the tanks, you actually will see some tanks that have very little in it. They're actually below their lowest known leak level. So we have no active leaks today that we're aware of, and we certainly have none to the environment.
Okay, so I just wanted that clarification there.
Yes.
Of course, we're not talking about 48.
Tank 48?
Yes.
No, sir, I'm not talking about Tank 48.
Okay, fine, thank you.
So I want to follow on with that question, because I recently went back and looked at some 4 mile branch
data.
And I had forgotten this, but in the 90s, there's technetium and iodine or something in the seeps, the 4 mile headwaters, which SNL concluded came from the seepage basins, which I don't think were closed at the time. My question to DOE and SRR is, how are you sure it came from the seepage basins and not from some of these leaking tanks, because those tanks are not very far from Four Mile.
Right.